Well, hey, it's great to see you here this morning. That was just a little teaser right there for the At the Movies. Starting next week, as Eric said, we're going to be looking at major movie hits. We're not doing the Lego movie, just so you know, all right? That one's done. But next week, we'll begin to look at what we think are going to be some of the summer hits and some of the fibers of faith that run through that. And then, you know, that scene is just great, right? The Lego movie, I mean, the Man of Plastic. How much better does it get than that? And the band with everything is awesome. I didn't tell them this, all right? I didn't tell PJ this before service, because I'm pretty sure he would have cut the song. But I think they could audition at Disney World with that song. I felt like I was dancing down like Main Street, you know, with like a musical production. And so way to go. Let's hear it for the band on that this morning. Yeah. We are in a series called Building People. We're actually wrapping it up today. And one of the big connects with Legos is, you know, you piece Legos together piece by piece. And one of the things we've been looking at is how God uses other people to help us become better versions of ourselves. God uses others to build into us, to help us, you know, become more of the person that he designed us to be. And, you know, it doesn't only come, you know, our way. We get built into, but we are also called to be expert people builders as well. And so we're going to wrap this today, and we're going to look at a very significant piece, kind of one thing that if we can model this thing after the life of Jesus, listen, this is a huge power tool in helping build people. So really excited to see you here today. My name's Kurt, by the way. I'm the lead pastor here at Cross Point, and happy Memorial Day weekend, as Eric said. We realize that, man, it's a big day in Indianapolis today. A lot of places you could be, so we consider it a privilege that you join us here at Cross Point. And before we dive into this today, let's go ahead and pray. God, thank you for the opportunity to come into this dark room for a little over an hour and maybe dive into things that we can't really dive into in many other sectors in life. God, I just ask you to take these next several minutes, as you have already, the moments we've spent together so far, and help them to be fruitful for us. And I pray that we would get a better picture of your ambition for us and what it means to be expert people builders. Help my words to articulate your heart today, and most importantly, God, I pray that what we do, what we experience in this place today will help us go to new places. I pray these things in your name and character. Amen. Well, you know, one of the phrases or the kind of titles, the words that was used to describe early followers of Jesus is a word we still use today. It was the word Christian. And ironically, back in the first century, when you call somebody a Christian, that was actually a derogatory term. It was actually a negative term. To call somebody a Christian actually meant little Christ. And so, you know, it was almost like the Romans and all the world power leaders of the day, they'd see these people that were following Jesus, and they're like, oh, there's just a bunch of little Christs over there. And they'd be like, what are you doing? You calling me a little Christ? Is that what you're calling me, a little Christ? And they all get up in arms about this, and they'd be like, yeah, that's what we're calling you. It's all right, I can take that. Because what they realized is that when somebody calls me a little Christ, that actually means that I'm beginning to reflect certain attributes and certain characteristics about who the person of Jesus really is. And in such a way that I'm beginning to look like him. And they took that as a compliment eventually, even though it was meant as a derogatory term. Two individuals that have probably played the most significant roles in my life of building me, especially in my early formative years, were my mom and dad. And they're both here today, by the way. They were here. My dad was here in first service. I think my mom may have been as well. And, you know, and it's rare for them to both be here, but it's great to have them here because they played a very significant role in my life. My dad was a pastor, much like me, and I was in the place where I said I'd never do this. It was on my never list. Never tell God you're not going to do something, all right, because this is what you end up doing. And it wasn't like I was opposed to it. I just didn't feel like that's what I was going to do. But he was a pastor when I was growing up, and for the most part, I was good with that, all right? I mean, and he was very formational in my life. I mean, he shaped me along with my mom, but was very key in, you know, and just developing key traits and character and so on and faith in me. The whole pastor thing, and there are times where I was good with that. There were times where it got a little tedious, you know, especially with my friends. I can remember, you know, playing basketball out on our driveway, and my friends would be like, so where do you live? Like, do you live up in, like, the steeple thing on top of that church? Do you live up there? I'm like, no, you're standing in my driveway. I live here, just like you. I mean, I have a house just like you have. For some reason, they thought, like, I lived up in the catacombs of the church or something, you know. And I had one friend who would always, you know, every time we'd take a water break, we'd go to the hose. You remember getting the hose as a kid? You go turn it on. And he'd run over and be the first one there, and he'd hold it. And he'd be like, all right. He was Catholic. He'd be like, all right, where's the reverend to bless it so we can drink holy water? You know, and he'd like, he wouldn't let me drink. And he'd call my dad over, and we'd laugh about it. And, you know, and so he was kind of called the Rev. And And so, you know, some of those moments, I look back on. There was a very deliberate one, very specific one that I remember, though. I was probably 13 or 14. We were playing a pickup game of basketball in our driveway. And we were playing with some of the neighbors. My next-door neighbor was a year older than me. He had a brother that was, like, early college age. So some of his buddies were over. So these are, like, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds. And we divvied up teams, and I was playing with some of those guys. And there came this moment where there was this big dispute over who the ball went off of when it went out of bounds. All right, and everybody's getting, you know how, if you ever played pickup ball, right? I mean, you self-regulate. So there's always these like, well, how are we going to solve this? So, you know, but I saw it. So I just stepped in and said, hey, I saw it. It's their ball. It's not our ball. And one of the older guys on my team, one of the buddies of my friends, you know, or my neighbor, looked at me and said, oh, it looks like we got a little rev right here. And I thought, oh, he's like, that's like, I think that's a derogatory statement right there. I think he's actually making fun of me because I stood up and did the right thing, even though he wished our team would have got the ball. And I thought about that moment a lot because I, you know, at that point, at 13, 14 years old, I didn't have the wit or the courage. I wished I would have had something witty to come back with, something courageous to come back with to him, but I just didn't. And yet I've thought about that moment a number of times over the years, and even this past week as I was thinking about this morning, I thought about that, and I thought, I wish I could have said something. What would I have said? I would have been like, hey, you call me Rev? All right, I'll take that. I mean, if you're talking about my life is somewhat resembling the life of my father, I can go with that. I mean, with all of the good things that he brings to the table, with all of his shortcomings, I can go with that. I'll take that. In fact, that's what it means to be a disciple. Discipleship is when you replicate your life into someone else. And they begin to see in the other person a resemblance of the person that's been building into them. That's what it means to be a disciple. In fact, Jesus, one of the last things he said before he left this earth, in Matthew chapter 28, he said, hey, go and make disciples of all nations. He said, go and make disciples to the ends of the earth. And he wasn't just saying, hey, go to all the people who know me and instruct them more. Tell them more. Help them get more knowledge. I mean, it's good to grow in knowledge, but we can get in this rut of spiritual bulimia. You know, where we kind of take in, we just kind of keep eating, keep receiving, and then eventually we get to the point where we vomit it all out on somebody. Like, hey, here's all the things I've learned. And then we go and we take in. You know, this spiritual blooming, he's not talking about that. He's talking about, yay, go out and people who don't know me, go into regions of the world where people have not yet heard of me and help them understand what it means to come to faith in me and then build into them. Develop them, help them to take a little bit in and then take a step and take a little more in and take a step so that they can eventually become reflectors of who Jesus is. Now it's interesting because when Jesus says this right here, he says, go and make disciples of all nations. He says this in Matthew and he's saying that to a Jewish audience. All right, the word disciple or discipleship is never used again in all of the scriptures after this moment. Why is that? It's because Jesus is Jewish. All right, Jesus is Jewish. He grew up in a Jewish culture, really a Hebrew culture, and they understood in that context what discipleship meant. So he used the word disciple as long as he was in that context. But eventually, when he got out of that context, he didn't use it anymore. Because you see, to understand discipleship, you have to understand what a rabbi is. And a rabbi was someone who literally went out, their job was to go out and get people to follow them so that they would replicate their life after the rabbi. And so Jesus is a rabbi, and he goes out to get 12 men, the 12 disciples, to literally replicate and emulate his life to such a degree that they're able to reproduce that in others after he goes back to be with God. Now, every now and then, so back in that day, when somebody said, hey, go into the world and make disciples, they're like, hey, we got that. We know what that means. We understand a rabbi. We get rabbinic thought. We get the rabbis have disciples. They understood what that meant. Every now and then, here at Crosspoint, people are like, well, why don't we use that word very often? Why don't we use discipleship? Well, we do discipleship. We just call it building people, developing people. It's what we've been talking about for the last 5 weeks. Because, see, that's our culture. We're doing just like the Bible, you know, you don't hear that word again because it wasn't a part of the Greek language. The Greek culture didn't get what a rabbi was. And so, you know, over the last 5 weeks, really today being 6 weeks, we've been talking about developing others. How are we building others? How are we discipling others? And, you know, discipleship isn't some spiritual hoity-toity thing where I can just, you know, become super spiritual. It's this thing where I'm saying, how am I taking the things that Jesus calls me to and actually building them into my life so my life begins to reflect Christ more and more. In my everyday life, in my work life, in my family life, in my marriage, in the way that I parent my kids. And in the first century, this is simply called discipleship. Now, you know, I don't know that there's anything that has greater impact than the picture we're going to get today when it comes to building people. And so I want us to look at this picture today because this is at the core foundational level of what Jesus was all about. And I would say it's the most powerful tool that we can use to develop others, to build into others, to help others go up and to the right to new places. You see, Jesus always took people to a higher level because of one of two things. Either because he built into them, he encouraged them, he challenged them, he called them to things that maybe they didn't think that they could do for themselves, or because he laid down his life so that others could go up. And so here's what Jesus said of himself in John 15. He said, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends." I mean, that is a powerful statement right there. He says, greater love knows no one than this, than what? That somebody will lay down their life. Now, this is a big deal right here. Now, I could wax on eloquently on this for a while, all right? I could keep going on and on, but I think it would be much more beneficial to us to jump into the learning lab on this one and to hear from a few living sacrifices. So we thought in honor of Memorial Weekend and people who have served our country, people know what it's like to put their lives on the line and to literally be a living sacrifice, we'd invite a few of them to share what that looks like with you today. So help me welcome my friends of the platform, Andrea and Reggie. Let's welcome them this morning. Hey, welcome, guys. And these guys, I'm going to have them introduce themselves, and we're going to dive into a little bit about what it means to be a living sacrifice. And so, Andrea, why don't you go ahead and start for us, introduce yourself, tell us what you do, what you've done.
My name is Andrea Jaffrey. I am a federal agent for the Department of Defense. Started off my career doing it strictly for the Air Force. Loved every minute of it. 9/11 put a whole new spin on life as we know it, especially in my world. And so fulfilled that mission, my more covert mission till now, where I'm a little more overt. Now I just do it for all the services of DOD, but just protecting all the troops out there.
And funny story, when I first met Andrea, actually when she first started coming to Crosspoint, she'd fill out this connection card. And every week, for the first few weeks, she'd put her occupation on here and it'd say special agent. Like, ooh, I wonder what kind of agent that is. And then I'm like, is that a joke? I mean, is it real? And so one day I ran into her in Starbucks and she was working. I mean, she wasn't dressed in normal like civilian clothes like this. She was in her business clothes, which is, I guess, civilian clothes. But I'm like, hey, you know, I've been meaning to ask you, like, what do you do for a living? She's like, well, I'm an agent for the Department of Defense. And I'm like, well, what are you doing here? Because Starbucks is like my office, right? And so she's like in my office and she's meeting with some people. And she's like, well, we just got off the firing range. I'm exchanging my handpiece, which means gun. And I'm like, oh my word, in my office, you know? And so anyway, it was kind of a cool moment where I actually realized, you know, what her life was about. So thank you, Andrea. Reggie, tell us a little bit about what you've done.
My name is Reggie Jackson. I've been a Marine Corps officer for 21 years, a combat vet. I've also served as here locally, although I'm sure you haven't seen me, as a undercover narcotics detective for the Fishers Police Department and a multi-agency drug task force and on the SWAT team. That's kind of my past. Currently, I'm recently in the financial services industry and I manage a team of financial advisors.
So you just like decided to go totally safe for a while, right? I mean, just like get out of the line of fire.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's a funny story about Reggie. When I first met Reggie, he was still doing narcotic work. I just heard he was a police officer. That's all I'd heard. So I went up to him and I'm like, hey, Reggie, I want to introduce myself to you. Because I always like meeting police officers like in a good moment as opposed to when you pull me over on the side of the road, you know? And he's like, oh, you'll never see me. I'm like, no, seriously, I drive pretty fast. I mean, I'd rather meet you now. And he's like, no, I'm in narcotics. If I see you, we got bigger problems than speeding tickets. So, you know, so it just, I always like to know these people. So anyway, you know, as we thought about what does it really mean, because I thought, I don't really fully understand what it means to lay down my life. I mean, you know, sometimes I hear people say, man, I gave my Diet Coke up to my kid. I mean, I let him have the rest of my Coke. That was a sacrifice. Well, that is a sacrifice. But, I mean, you know, unless you've been in their roles, I don't know that any of us know what it means to really sacrifice, to lay down our life for our friends. So I've asked them to share a little bit of a picture on that. And let's start with you, Andrea. Help me understand, you know, why'd you guys get into this profession? Why did you choose? And what drew you to a profession where you knew that you would be serving your country, protecting people, but also that you might have to pay the ultimate price? I mean, you're here, so you haven't, which is a good thing. But what causes you to end up in that place?
In school, I thought I was going to go to law school. Just fell in love with the law. Always kind of been that person doing the right thing. By no means perfect, but always wanted to do the right thing, had the call to do the right thing. My mother was a public servant. My grandfather was an immigrant. And so there's kind of that combination of a love for my country. Wasn't too sure what I was going to do with it as a criminal justice major. But I called it kind of dumb luck. I got into the agent program for the Air Force, and I wanted to travel all over the world. I wanted to help in any capacity that I could, but I also wanted to learn, you know, what else was out there. I guess I didn't really realize until later my passion for doing that along the way through different assignments, different deployments. I realized that that was definitely my calling, and my faith helped along with that of understanding you don't always know why you're there or your purpose. Sometimes that's after the fact. But it was just something I've always been driven to do, and I've never, you know, until today, we don't talk about much of what we do anyways, especially my Air Force days. Everything's classified. By the time it gets declassified, I probably won't be around or I won't remember what I did. But you know, you just don't think about that sacrifice every day of your life. It's your passion that you feel strongly about.
Yeah. Awesome. How about you, Reggie? Why'd you get into this?
Well, my dad was a Marine, and I'll go ahead and preface this, is that the only ex-Marines are dead Marines, so my dad is deceased. So if you see someone that says they're a Marine, don't call them an ex-Marine.
Yeah, make a note of that. When you talk to Reggie, you don't do that, right?
They'll correct you. They're just no longer on active duty. I've always been one that always wanted to help fight for those who that couldn't or weren't able to fight for themselves. And I always told myself if I were to join the service, I wanted to join the toughest, the roughest, the meanest, and the baddest service out there. And the one
I still take offense to that.
Yeah.
So, it's always this competition between services. Have you noticed that? And there's always.
Well, it is what it is.
It's what drives you. It is what it is.
You know, I joined the Marines, and you know, it's a flash. I can remember 21 years ago when I enlisted, and I got off the bus and I met my drill instructors for the first time. And for those of you who've heard about the yellow footprints, there really are yellow footprints that, and it all starts from there. But the biggest thing I think is I've always been wired this way, and all the Marines that I've served with, and those that have served under me, that I've helped develop. And Marines that I brought into the service, they've always had this sense of run into the sound of the gunfire. And some of you have seen the commercials now, which is one of my favorites of all. I know those that have seen we used to make fun of Slaying the Dragon and all that stuff with the sword. That's not realistic, but the one now where you got the Marines running to the bombs and they're running in the desert and they're running toward the fight. I've always been wired that way, and I think all the Marines that I've served with and anyone you come in contact with will say, you know, that's one of the key reasons why they serve, why they currently serve, or why they have served, along with the people to the left and right. So,
yeah, awesome. So you guys both have served. You've been on the front lines at different points. I mean, you've been in places where your life, you realize your life is very fragile, but you don't go into every day probably thinking that. But how has this impacted your faith? I mean, how has this impacted your understanding of God or what that idea of sacrifice means?
I think initially when I started doing it was just so exciting to move all over the place and see different things that you just didn't too much think about. This is what I'm supposed to do. This is what I'm going to do. I will say later on, as my family got bigger. I got married, and all of a sudden, I'm making him stop what he's doing and pick it up and move, because he'll find a job wherever we go. And then as I started to have children, I think faith became such a bigger part of helping understand why we do what we do and keep you on that path to say there are going to be sacrifices that I have to make in my everyday, even from, you know, missing birthday parties to missing first steps, first words, all kinds of things, that being strong in faith and knowing that God has put you in that place at that time for a reason kind of helps explain the craziness of picking up and moving all the time and the, you know, deployments that we take and that front line that we're on.
I mean, would you say there's a calling on this? I mean, do you have a call where you feel like this is my role in life to fulfill this?
Absolutely. There have been times where, you know, just like in your everyday life, even you have your ups and downs and you think, what am I doing? Me personally, in the next 2 weeks, I'm about ready to miss another birthday. And explaining to your kids that every time, I'm hoping that they realize it's for a picture way bigger than even sometimes I understand. It is for a mission that goes way beyond us. And, you know, I can just hope that I explain that and they see it, because it's a calling. It definitely is a calling.
And do your kids understand? Do they know what you do?
I shoot bad people. For anybody who has girls that try to date my boys, just remember that. As long as they know mommy shoots bad people. I think that they're starting to get it. They're starting to see the understanding of what it is to be free in this country, the sacrifices that myself, all my co-agents and all the other troops out there that are deployed every day that we see and that we're helping. I try to explain that to them because, you know, they're like, I can't believe you just locked up a bad guy. I'm like, you know, he is unfortunately putting in harm's way our troops over there in the sandbox and every place else all around the world. So it's bigger, you know, it's bigger than us here at home. I just have a small little piece in it. But try to tell them I'm proud to be that small little piece, even though I don't see the result of it every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. How about you, Reggie? How's your faith played into this? What's it done to you?
Well, actually, my faith played a very vital, and it was just a critical role in my career, both in the undercover operations, as one would think, very critical, but even more so in combat operations. The Marines and soldiers and airmen that I served with and that served under me when we're in combat in Iraq and all the other places, you know, we had a celebration of life at the end of every day, because tomorrow's never promised, and we knew that, and we saw the results of war and the carnage of war. And how ugly it can be. But faith was one of the things, and having a foundation of faith was one of the things that helped me make sense of it all, and me as a leader help pass on to some of my younger Marines and troops to help them make sense of it all as well, so they wouldn't be so desensitized to it. One of the things that kind of helped me as I kind of thought about it was the scripture that was put on the screen earlier, that this was something that, you know, kind of I've read daily, you know, and this is something we live by. And yes, any person in the service, I mean, I was a grunt. So for those of you know what a grunt is, I was an infantryman. So this is what we live by. You know, we lay down our life for not only our country, but our fellow Marines and servicemen to our left and right. That was just our code. But this is a very powerful scripture, and it was one of the ways that I helped, you know, instill that into some of my troops.
Awesome. One more question for you guys. How do you measure the result? I mean, obviously win a war, but how do you feel like I have accomplished what I'm here to be doing right now?
I think sometimes for me, my accomplishments aren't known to the world, won't be known to the world for many years to come. But for the small defeats, I mean, it's nice to see people behind bars, not going to lie. But it's also instilled the patriotism that hopefully my children have, whether they follow in my footsteps or not, because, of course, they don't want to be killed. So getting beyond that. But hopefully they at least take, even if they don't follow in my footsteps, they at least take that calling and listen to that calling. It sometimes is not an easy thing to do. But, you know, follow within faith and their passion, and hopefully you'll see it in them.
Awesome. Reggie, how about you?
I think kind of a couple stages that I kind of measure it. One, from being in combat. I was there when Iraq became a sovereign nation. They had their first elections, and that was a huge step in the right direction. Regardless of what you see now, there were small steps, but it was still a step. On the narcotics piece, it was the way to measure it was being able to help a young adult turn their life around, to have them not go down the path to where drugs kind of consumed them and took over their life and destroyed their families. But even more so, what I see is in my own family and my kids. I have a I have a 3.5-year-old daughter, but my 8-year-old is seeing him start to fight and help those who can't or can't help themselves or fight for themselves. So basically seeing it in the kids, and when I see it in him, Amy, my wife and I, that's when we sit back, and we've often sat back and said, we're doing it right, when we're modeling it right, when our kids are starting to do it without being prompted to be a leader and to go out and not be the bully, but to be the kid to step up and have some moral courage and help those that are weaker than him. That's a huge accomplishment.
Wow. So. Awesome. It's ironic to me. Two things stand out to me after both of our conversations this morning. One, both of them, you guys are out fighting, defending, our country around the world, fighting off bad guys and, in hand, live combat. And yet, one of the ways you measure results is in your own kids. And in that picture of discipleship, earlier, let's put that up again. Disciple is when you replicate your life into somebody else. And you both are saying, amidst all the things I'm doing, when I see this replicated in my kids, that's a win, which is just phenomenal. The other thing that just blew me away is you guys talk like this is just casual. I mean, you're like, I'm sitting here like, oh my word. I mean, you guys, you got families, and I know your families, and your wife is my kid's principal, and yet you talk like this is just what we do. And which just, you guys embody a life of living sacrifice, because you don't think about what's this going to cost me. You go out and you do it. And I just think that is an excellent picture for us to get a glimpse of, because most of us have no idea what it means to be a sacrifice. Let's thank our vets and our live protectors of our country today. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Bless you. Bless you, buddy. Wow, that is awesome stuff. You can go ahead and grab a seat. I tell you what, I don't know about you, I can't get by around the casual way they talk about this. I mean, I'm sitting here inspired. I'm like, these guys lay their life on the line every day, and yet, what does that mean for me? And so, I don't know where this lands for you. I want to do some next steps. We do this every week at Crosspoint. So you can go ahead and take out your connection card. There's some next steps on here, but I'm guessing this probably lands in different places for every single one of us. I mean, you just got a living picture, all right? They haven't paid the ultimate sacrifice of death. But they've come about as close as you can come to that point. This is a picture of living sacrifice. And I don't know what's going on in your life right now. I don't know what's going on in your relationships. I don't know who you're building into or who's building into you or what decisions you're facing this week or what tensions you might be running into this week. But here's one thing I do know about you. What I do know is there's probably some situation in every single one of our lives where we could take on a posture of sacrifice this week. We take on a posture of, you know, saying, hey, I'm gonna lay my life down to the extent that's needed in this moment in order to put you up. You know, maybe our next step is saying, hey, I'm going to thank somebody. I mean, there's somebody that's been doing that for me, that's been putting their life down. You know, it might be Andrea and Reggie after service. I don't know. There's probably other people, but just saying, hey, thank you. Thank you for doing this. You know, for others of us, it might be, you know, being intentional in waiving my rights this week in a relationship. You know, it could be a situation where maybe there's been a tension in your family between you and your spouse over who picks up the kids when the nurse calls and is like, hey, you need to come get your kid. They're sick. And you're like, well, I'm busy. I need, you know, it may be. Listen, men, let me talk to you for just a moment. When you get that call, you need to waive your rights. Yeah, that's the greatest posture sacrifice a man can ever make, is waiving his rights and saying, hey, I'm going to be actively involved in that process. All right, maybe there's a relationship that's gone south. Maybe there's been infidelity in a marriage and you're just hanging on to it and you can't get past the bitterness. And part of that sacrifice is saying, I'm going to, from this point forward, waive my rights and move on. I don't know. It's a wide coverage of how this applies to us today. Why don't you go ahead and take a moment and mark your next step. Say, hey, here's what God's prompting me to do. And there's something about marking it and saying, hey, here's where I'm going to be intentional. It's one step. Being built as a person is one step after another step. As I was eating my breakfast this morning, I was thinking about how, you know, even what I eat, this Special K sausage with egg and a little bit of cheese breakfast sandwich, ultimately is something that gives me life. I mean, my life is going to be sustained a bit further today for another few hours because I had the sandwich this morning. And as I was breaking this down, I thought, you know, there's a sausage patty. One day, this was a pig. It was out in a field somewhere. One day, it got in a truck and went to the slaughterhouse. And, you know, went from the slaughterhouse to the factory and eventually the sausage plant. And one day it landed in Special K's, you know, factory and made its way into my sandwich. I was thinking about the grains that, you know, once were in a field growing attached to the life source that got cut, got harvested, put in a thrasher, you know, ground, went through the milling process. Eventually, again, made a nice piece of flatbread. I thought about the egg, man. The dude never had a chance. The egg didn't even have a chance. I mean, it didn't even, right? But as I think about this, I mean, everything that gives me life has to in some way give of its life. I mean, everything that sustains me for a bit longer actually had to lose, had to disconnect from the source of life, had to lose its life in order for me to be sustained yet a day further. This meal that we're going to share in these next few moments is a meal that Christians, little Christ, have celebrated for hundreds of years, thousands of years, all the way back to the first century of Jesus, when Jesus had this meal as he was reclining with his 12 disciples. And it's ironic because it's got a lot of names. It's called the Eucharist, it's called the Lord's Supper, it's called the Mass, the Holy Communion, but it's all the same thing. It's all this meal where Jesus basically took the meal that they were eating and began to make spiritual connects to something very physical and tangible. And he realized he was about ready to go to the cross. He was about ready to give of his life. He knew his friends had no idea what that meant. And yet he also realized that life must be given in order for something new to begin. And so here's the way the Old Testament book of Leviticus puts it. It says, for the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it for you on the altar to make atonement for your souls. Atonement means at one moment you become one with Christ so that you can actually be restored with Christ. For it is the blood that makes atonement by the life. Which basically says how a life has to be given. The life blood. That's why you hear the phrase life blood. Because blood is our life. The life of an animal or of a human being had to be given in order for there to be forgiveness or grace. And so that's why when Jesus was sitting there, he picked up a piece of bread off the table and he said this with his friends. It says he took the bread and when he had given thanks, he broke it. And he gave it to his disciples saying, take and eat, this is my body. He said, hey, my body's going to be broken for you. He said, my body's going to be laid out. It's going to be thrashed 39 times because 40 would be way too many. It's going to be split wide open. I'm going to go through incredible pain, not for myself, not for my own benefit, but so that you can one day have life. And then he picked up the cup on the table. And when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you. This is the blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. Now, it was given to everyone, but he knew that only many would receive it. So what I'm doing is for everyone. And many of you will come to know this. And so, in that moment, Jesus is saying, he's making the connect that the life source of any human being is in its blood, and my blood is now what you celebrate in this cup. That I gave of my blood so that you could have life for another day, and eventually eternal life with me. And so we're going to experience this meal, and this is for those who call themselves followers of Jesus, friends of Jesus, Christians, whatever the phrase you would like to put to that. And we're going to have two stations, one underneath each screen on the side. And if you're somebody who does not know Jesus, you're somebody who you know, you feel like Jesus is drawing you toward him today because, you know, we come to Jesus because he draws us to him. Then you can know him simply by having faith and receiving his grace. There's nothing you can do to earn it. There's nothing you can do to pay for it. There's nothing you can do to each just get a little bit closer to it. You simply receive it, something that's already done, and you accept it into your life by just simply saying that, Jesus, I want to receive from you. And you can even do that right now, so let's go ahead and pray. Heavenly Father, man, you are beautiful. It's incredible. It's incredible what you did. It's incredible the picture of sacrifice you gave. You're the best, greatest master planner ever. I don't know that anybody could have ever thought of a movement like you have created that actually works. Nobody could have thought of sending their own son sacrificially to the cross, dying, as a total way of flipping the story. And no one would have thought about a continual remembrance of that we can identify with through the bread and the cup, of what it means to live a life that is lived sacrificially instead of puffing ourselves up. So God, we thank you for this model. And God, for those of us who might be moving towards you right now, by receiving grace, we can know you. And so God, I just pray that if anybody's mouthing those words or just sharing those words in their heart with you right now, God, that you would just draw them in. That we would receive from you. That we would experience your grace covering us simply because we want it. And because we want you to begin to help us lead our life. And so God, I just pray in these next moments that all of us would take a step towards you today, that we would encounter the sacrificial picture and image and experience of what you did for us, and that we might reflect that just a bit more in our lives. Amen. Well, as we sing here in just a moment, as I said, the tables are open to anyone who calls Jesus Christ their Savior, their Lord. If you have a relationship with him, we invite you to exit out the side rows, come to the table, and then leave the table through the center row. And if you're somebody who has not made that decision, but you're here this morning exploring, man, it's so cool that you're here. We're so excited that you're here. And we're just going to ask you to stay and observe. There's going to be a lot of movement happening in these next few minutes. Just observe what takes place. Because what happens at this table doesn't represent your life right now. But hopefully you'll get to that point and you'll see that and experience that. So let's stand to our feet. And as the band plays, let's sing. And you're welcome to come to the table.